Chapter 6 Visualizing the Land of the Pure. While the creation of Pakistan was a political project, hidden within it was another question that received less searching attention. What was to be Pakistan's national culture? What was the cultural counterpoint to the political project? In September 1944, Jinnah swept around this when writing to Gandhi that the Muslims were a nation and not a minority. We are a nation of 100 million, and, what is more, we are a nation with our own distinctive culture and civilization, language and literature, art and architecture, names and nomenclature, sense of value and proportion, legal laws and moral codes, customs and calendar, history and tradition, aptitude and ambitions. In short, we have our own distinctive outlook on life and of life. A year later, in the 1945 to 1946 provincial polls, a slogan emerged that represented this succinctly: Pakistan ka matlab kya? La ilaha illallah. What does Pakistan mean? No God but Allah. Couplet from a poem by Asghar Sadai. This, then, was perhaps the common perception, if not the consensus, among the Muslim community in late colonial India vis-à-vis questions of political representation, if not yet of separation. The problem was that once separated from India, the two culturally diverse wings of Pakistan were geographically separated by India. Internally, too, these wings had people who had uprooted, voluntarily or otherwise, and travelled there to create a new promised land. Amidst this diversity of locals and migrants, it was religion and the concomitant desire to have a representative homeland for Indian Muslims that had brought them together and that was supposed to keep them united. As it turned out, not for long. Carving out a national culture from these layers of ethnicities, linguistic identities, and regional affiliations, while simultaneously trying to clearly and cleanly distinguish oneself from the historical baggage associated with pre-partition India, proved to be complicated and contradictory. Literature, language, and politics. Questions around the search for crafting a national cultural identity, with a simultaneous need to re-create history, arose soon after independence. Answers were attempted from a wide ideological spectrum, among whom were Wheeler and his patron, Fazlur Rahman, from East Pakistan, who was the first Minister for Education, 1947 to 1953. A lawyer and an educationist from Dhaka and Calcutta universities, and a member of the Royal Asiatic Society of Bengal, who became the president of the Pakistan Historical Society, Rahman insisted that a broader study of Islam should be at the heart of any program. Within 10 years, Jamil Jalibi, a scholar of Urdu from the United Provinces, wrote critically of this approach, terming it neo-colonial, superseding the indigenous. Our independence, interlaced with the partition of India, has meant that we either look to Europe for modern culture or try to retrieve it from the archaeological remnants in Mohenjo-daro, Takshila and Harappa, which were originally discovered by Mr. Wheeler. If Pakistan were to claim this long history, it also meant embracing a diverse and intermingled history. On the other hand, if a more Islamic culture was desired, then this long history was problematic. This debate echoed the two competing tendencies of Muslim nationalism, namely those of Sir Syed Ahmad Khan and Maulana Maududi, which still remain current. Sir Syed was the 19th century intellectual who advocated Western-style education and established the Mohammedan Anglo-Oriental College, Aligarh, for this pursuit of rational science and internal reform, and influenced Jinnah and Iqbal. Maududi, a 20th century thinker and founder of the J.I., desired a return to a form of pure Islam, with Sharia law. With the breakup of Pakistan in 1971, Maududi's ideas got a stimulus, gained currency, and, to an extent, made answering the previous questions simpler and clearer. Indeed, the view of two regions of Indus or Indic culture has been substantiated further after 1971, because Western Pakistan is a far more natural and feasible entity than the two separate regionalized wings. In 1968, Faiz Ahmed Faiz, Pakistan's poet laureate, produced a report which would later become the blueprint for Pakistan's cultural policy under Bhutto. Although a left-wing intellectual who won the Lenin Peace Prize in 1962 and an atheist, it was impossible for Faiz to avoid the question of faith in framing policy. He stressed the importance of Islam, but, crucially, did not end there. He continued that while they shared a common faith, the people of Pakistan also shared distinctive cultural traits of their own, which distinguished them as a society and a nation from their co-religionists elsewhere. The Faiz report led to the establishment of Pakistan's National Council of Arts in 1973. This new cultural policy emerged in an era that also saw the rise of the Pakistan Television Corporation, PTV, the sole state-run channel in the country from the mid-1960s for 30 years, in addition to a spread of cinema and radio, through all of which media popular culture also spread. These new platforms allowed Zulfikar Ali Bhutto to promote his brand of a Pakistani cultural identity, something that was both more important and less difficult now the Eastern Wing was no longer part of the equation. Since this attempt at formulating a national cultural policy, there has been little investment in either planning or promoting the creative industries, which in part explains the decline in subsequent decades. The liberalisation of the media in 2000 has been a significant landmark in terms of diversifying, but also diluting the voices, content, and discussion. The decision to liberalise mass media was made by Musharraf, and it is the military establishment that continues to watch over the watchdog. Self-censorship amidst shrinking free speech is a common facet of present-day Pakistan. An equally important factor behind the decision to liberalise and open up the media was that Musharraf felt Pakistan had lost the information and cultural war to India and needed to create new platforms. Whereas Faiz was mindful that any national culture had to diffuse through dialogue rather than be imposed from the top, state education was an important institutional chain of command to produce, propagate, and instill the ideology of Pakistan. It was here that the subject history was replaced by Pakistan Studies in 1971, the latter made compulsory in the curriculum from schools through to university. It was both a symbolic shift and substantial change in that it focused on the entirety of Pakistan's existence while leaving out inconvenient truths. While it acquainted the learner with the ancient Indus Valley civilization, it leapt between the succeeding periods thereafter to fast forward to the Pakistan movement. The curriculum assumed a more Islamic slant under Zia. This process of historical revisionism has been crucial in creating a monolithic and homogeneous Pakistan. The legacy of a selective writing and teaching of history is pervasive in the subcontinent and feeds the root of much of the religious nationalism across borders. Still, no state project in a region of such diverse peoples, with their strong tradition of orality and visual cultures, can completely erase these multiple threads that form the cultural roots of Pakistan. Between the real and real. In 1913, the first silent movie, Raja Harishchandra, King Harishchandra, directed by Dada Sahib Phalke, was produced in British India, and the first talkie, Alam Ara, The Ornament of the World, directed by Ardeshir Irani, followed in 1931. By 1947, the The film industry was well established in the cities of Bombay, Lahore and Calcutta, producing films in the popular lingua franca of Hindustani, alongside Bengali and Punjabi. Lahore saw its first silent film, The Daughter of Today, in 1924, directed by Shankaradev Arya. Through this time, there were 9 cinema houses in Lahore. The creation of Pakistan prompted or forced many artists and technicians in the film industries to choose between the 2 countries. This travel of film culture, in particular, took place between Bombay and Lahore, and, among others, saw the playwright Saadat Hasan Manto, 1912 to 1955, the prolific cataloguer of the pathos of partition, the music composer Master Ghulam Khedir, 1908 to 1953, and the singing superstar Noor Jahan, 1926 to 2000, moved to Pakistan. Lakshmi Chowk, in the heart of the walled city of Lahore, became the focal point for the industry, with cinemas, distributors, producers, all located in the vicinity, with easy access for many of the stars who also lived in the area. The returning traffic saw Lahore-based producers like Roop Keshori and Dalsukh M. Pancholi leave the city. The latter's studio, Art Pictures, was left in the custody of his legal advisor, who went on to produce Terry Yard, Your Memories, directed by Daud Chand, Pakistan's first film in 1948. There persisted a somewhat surreal expectation for some time in the late 1940s and the early 1950s that the new political division would not disrupt the common heritage of art, craft, literature, music, and cinema. Indian films continued to be imported for a brief while, albeit with customs duty. While this was good for the cinema goer in Pakistan, it was not so good for the producers, and their agitation, in addition to worsening intergovernmental relations with India in 1950, saw an uncertain stop-start scenario, which was not helped by the state's attitude to the film industry. In 1949, the Pakistani Minister of Industry, Sardar Abdurab Nishtar, declared that, in principle, Muslims should not get involved in filmmaking. Being the work of lust and lure, it should be left to the infidels. The trouble was that even watching films depended upon the mercurial relationship with India. The government seesawed between allowing Indian films into the Pakistani market and banning them or prohibiting artistic collaborations, a situation which continues today. While the mid-1950s continued with a limited number of films produced and imported, with the onset of Ayub Khan's military regime, there was a spurt in home production. Amongst these, the most notable was Jago Hua Severa, The Day Shall Dawn, 1959. The film, directed by Lahore-based A.J. Kadar, was shot in Dhaka, East Pakistan, and its script, in Urdu, was by Fez. A collaborative neo-realist film, it was acclaimed internationally, but criticised at home for failing to capture the authenticity of rural East Pakistan. Jago Hua Severa is memorable also for being the first Pakistani film to be submitted for nomination to the Academy Awards. With the exception of Gungat, The Veil, directed by Khurshid Anwar, 1962, there were no other submissions to the Oscars until 2013, when Zinda Bagh, Run Alive, directed by Fajad and Minu, was submitted. Although the period of Ayub Khan's government is considered to be modern and progressive, the reality was that when the film Jago Hua Severa premiered in London, Fez was prevented from attending. In 1954, the year in which the Communist Party of Pakistan was banned, Ruhi, Soulful, directed by W.Z. Ahmed, also became the first film to be banned by the Pakistan Film Censor Board. A largely imagined fear of socialism was the reason behind this decision. Ideological fears, coupled with the reticent religious leadership, ensured that the industry continued to meander through the 1960s. Looking back, the period appears somewhat of a plateau, if not a peak, given what followed thereafter, first under the populist Bhutto and then the theocratic Zia. This is poignantly captured in Kahmosh Pani, Silent Waters, directed by Sabihir Suma, 2003, which revisits both the impact of Zia's Islamization and the shadows of 1947 still lurking around at the time. Interestingly, the 1970s saw a rise of regional cinema, especially in Punjabi and Pashto languages. Indeed, this cinematic decade belonged to the legendary character of Malo Jat, directed by Yunus Malik, 1979, played by actor Sultan Rahi. He became a hugely popular character, rustic, an embodiment of the common man, dressed in the traditional lungi kurta, and ready to fight all social evil. At the same time, the film sparked the genre of hyper-violence in Punjabi films, but also perhaps signalled the dominance of the Punjabis following the breakup of Pakistan in 1971. Badar Munir, the Pashto equivalent of Sultan Rahi, had emerged on the silver screen in 1968. He starred in a 1973 film, Urbal, Fire, directed by Mumtaz Ali Khan, which was hugely successful in KP and introduced and popularised the trend of violence and of gyrating dances by women in Pashto cinema. In the deeply conservative KP, this provided pseudo-erotic entertainment for men. In his influential work on Pakistani cinema, Mashtuq Ghazdar argues that characters such as Maula Jat, a downtrodden peasant, were symbolic of the repression provoked by martial law in 1977. The decade that had begun with the loss of the Eastern Wing was to end with the Soviet invasion of Afghanistan, bringing in a drug and gun culture. Alongside Iran's revolution and its turn towards state religiosity, this was an impulse which started to permeate cultural spaces, even as they became patronized by the Zia regime. There was already complete censorship of the press. Radio and TV were under state control, and the glamorization of violent heroic figures dealing with the problems in society resonated with people who were otherwise constrained. With the breakup of Pakistan and political shifts taking place in the 1970s, the decline set in for the film industry. Apart from losing a valuable market, the number of films being produced declined from 114 in 1970 to 79 films released in 1971. While the Zia era promoted social piety and religiosity, the actual numbers of films released remained steady. 83 films released in 1977 compared to 84 in 1988 when he died. The impact, however, permeated society gradually, and the more detrimental decline occurred in the late 1990s, and interestingly, concluded during the more secular Musharraf period in the more turbulent era of post-9/11. By the end of Musharraf's period in power in 2008, only 36 films were released. Reflecting the broader decline of the film industry was the closure of cinema halls, which dropped from 493 in 1998 to a paltry 106 by 2007. Instead, they were giving way to a new substitute. Former cinema halls were being transformed into shopping malls. Naaz Cinema in Karachi was one of the first to be converted into Naaz Plaza. Both independent and state-sponsored cinema, often infused with strong patriotism and propaganda, has undergone something of a revival since, but nothing comparable to its status before Zia, whose shadow is now arguably longer than that cast by Jinnah. Combined with the social change taking place was the impact of technology. New technology in the form of the VCR player, which also brought piracy, especially of foreign films, growth of television, and more recently streaming, have effectively killed the film industry in Pakistan and confined film watching to the private, cheaper, and safer spaces of home. However, it was the explosion of new cable TV channels following liberalisation that dramatically changed the small screen. Particularly notable was the appearance of the risque character of Begum Nawazish Ali, a high society lady in programmes which aired between 2005 and 2007 on Arj TV. The Late Night Show with Begum Nawazish Ali was hosted by Ali Salim in drag and greatly extended the boundaries of conversation and criticism, raising issues of homosexuality and transgender through humour and innuendo. While Begum Nawazish was popular with Indian audiences too, it was the Pakistani dramas, catapulted by the Zindagi channel in India, that provided Pakistan programmes with a new platform and following from 2014. Pakistani serials and dramas are often considered more mature and sophisticated than their Indian counterparts, and significantly, they helped to cut across the political divide and demystify the other. This period of cultural collaboration and connection proved short-lived, as ties were severed following the attack on an Indian army brigade in Uri in September 2016. Pakistani stars such as Fawad Khan and Mahira Khan, who had successfully crossed over to mainstream Bollywood cinema, were dramatically dropped and banned in the hyper-nationalist milieu. Blurring the line between the real and the real have been the films and dramas made by Inter-Services Public Relations, ISPR, the media wing of the Pakistan Army. Established in 1949, ISPR has moved beyond just broadcasting and coordinating news on behalf of the military and also produces entertainment for mass consumption. This includes dramas such as Alpha Bravo Charlie, 1998, annual Independence Day songs, and action-packed patriotic films like the hugely successful War, Strategy, directed by Balal Lashari, 2013, all designed to instill a sense of narrow nationalism. Collectively, these media productions by ISPR show the move towards a stronger, single ideological position in which simultaneously the space for individual creativity has shrunk. There are exceptions, such as Khuda Ke Liye, For the Sake of God, directed by Shuaib Mansoor, 2007, which was one of the highest-grossing films in recent times. Made in the post-9/11 climate, it explores the issue of extremism, presenting a nuanced and moderate Islam for audiences at home and abroad. In January 2020, however, Samad Khosat, one of the more successful directors in contemporary Pakistan, refused to release his film Zindagi Tamasha, Circus of Life, to avoid a ban on the film. The film, about a struggling cleric shunned after a video of him dancing at a wedding goes viral, caused a furore following the release of its trailer, and Khosat received many threats from Kadim Hussein Rizvi, an Islamic scholar and founder of the far-right political party Tehreek-e-Labbaik Pakistan, who asserted that the film might lead people to deviate from Islam and the Prophet, and accused Khosat of blasphemy. Naya Pakistan? Equally paradoxical and perplexing is the relationship the Pakistani state has with music. The country has produced some of the most widely recognised and globally popular Khawali, Sufi devotional song, performers of modern times, such as Abida Parveen, Badar Ali Khan, Farid Ayaz and Abu Muhammad, Nusrat Fateh Ali Khan, Rahat Fateh Ali Khan, and the Sabri Brothers, amongst many others. Pakistan has counted among its musical riches some of the greatest poets of the semi-classical Ghazal form and, in contemporary times, has often been a leading theatre for pioneering, experimenting pop musicians, as compared to the vast and mostly vapid Bollywood popular music machine from India. Yet at the same time, theological debates continue about the extent to which music is either haram, forbidden, or halal, acceptable, in an Islamic country, thereby blighting not just social pleasure, but also national treasures and international soft capital. The medieval tradition of Islamic mysticism has for centuries expressed itself in a lyrical form in an oral, vernacular society of myths and memories, legends and ballads, odes and epics. The rag-based northern Hindustani form of classical music of the subcontinent composed and improvised by traditional gharanas, loosely schools or families of music, and patronized by the old courtly culture and the new colonial capitalists, has been the crowning jewel of Indo-Islamic syncretism. The highbrow three-part musical form of khayal, drupid, tumri, vocals with instrumental accompaniment of tabla, sitar, pakawaj, which emerged from roughly the 13th century, had a more popular and less restrained counterpart in khawali, performed more at shrines of Sufi mystics, pirs, than at the courts of princes. Nusrat Fatir Ali Khan, born in 1948 in Faisalabad, Punjab, is widely regarded as the greatest and most global of khawals, with a family pedigree and musical lineage that go back 600 years. Emerging in the 1970s with his troupe, he subsequently burst on the Western international music scene with the help of a British music company, Oriental Star Agencies, which presented him to a wide audience beyond the subcontinental diaspora. In 1985, he performed at the WOMAD, World of Music, Arts and Dance, Festival in London, and thereafter continued to collaborate with international artists until his untimely death in 1997, at the age of 49. Few other South Asian artists have crossed musical, geographical, religious and generational boundaries the way he did. Equally, therefore, for some, none was a greater transgressor. Before him, though, partition had drawn a line between musicians, as with filmmakers. Khan's own family originally came from Jalandhar, Punjab, India. While one of the greatest exponents of Ghazal, poetry of love, in Pakistan, Mehdi Hasan, 1927-2012, was also born in Luna, Rajasthan, India, to a musical family. Hasan's family suffered financially following its migration, and like many others, he did odd jobs before his first performance on Radio Pakistan in 1952 brought him into the public limelight. He sang a ghazal by Faiz Ahmed Faiz, Gulan Mein Rang, Colours in the Flower, which won the hearts of many and went on to establish him as the king of ghazals, Shehenshah-e-Ghazal. Some years younger than him is Ustad Ghulam Ali, born 1940, from Sialkot, Pakistani Punjab, and a disciple of his namesake Bade Ghulam Ali Khan of Patiala, Indian Punjab, one of the great aforementioned gharanas. His electrifying radio and stage performances in the 1960s and 1970s led to his songs subsequently being sought by the Indian film industry, thus taking his music to mass audiences across the border. Noor Jahan, the Queen of Melody, Malika-e-Terenam, was born in 1926 in Kasur, Punjab, Pakistan. Trained in classical singing under Ustad Bedi Ghulam Ali Khan, she went on to become a leading singer-actress in the Bombay film industry in the mid-1940s. She, along with her director husband, Shaukat Hussain Rizvi, moved to Karachi after partition and emerged as the leading female vocalist. Mehdi Hasan, Khan, and Noor Jahan formed part of an outstanding pre-partition generation of musicians of the Hindustani classical tradition. Other famous names include Roshan Ara Begum, Amanat Ali Khan, Farida Khanam, and Iqbal Bano. Their music can neither be contained by national boundaries nor quarantined by religious strictures. Radio Pakistan and PTV played an important early role in taking music to the homes of people, thereby ensuring crucial space for artists and their creativity to flourish. It is said that music has no language. For a country that started to strain on linguistic nationalism, the eastern wing of Pakistan too had a thriving tradition, which intermingled with the West. Runa Leila, born in 1952 in Sylhet, present-day Bangladesh, became a leading playback singer for Pakistani films before moving to Bangladesh in 1974. Nayara Noor, born in 1950 in Guwahati, Assam, India, moved to Karachi later that decade and made a name for her singing from the mid-1970s onwards, especially her renderings of Fairs's compositions. Within the widening rift between state and society, there is evidence of tolerant spaces. Singers like A. Nair, the Benjamin Sisters, S.B. John, and Salim Raza, all Christian and all achieving considerable success. Tensions and conflicts have challenged, even severed, many of the cultural links across the Pakistan-India-Bangladesh boundaries, but no history of music and musicians can be anything but transnational. Alamgir Huq, called the Elvis of the East, was also of Bengali descent, but he remained in Pakistan, where he pioneered the pop music scene before the emergence of Nazia Hassan, the queen of pop, who took the subcontinent by storm in 1980. Her meteoric career was remarkable for its cross-border collaborative elements, her success in Bombay films, and her presence in the British album charts. By the mid-1980s, brought up and based as she was in London, she represented an urban, if not elite, anomaly at a time when the Pakistani grassroots were being transformed by Zia. Determined to visually Islamize Pakistani society and its presentations, his regime required female presenters on PTV to cover their heads. The contradictions in Zia's state project existed side by side. The gendered element has only been on the rise since then. Zia's Pakistan also saw the emergence of another pop or rock band from Rawalpindi in 1986. Vital Signs included two students from Peshawar University and went on to become one of the most commercially successful bands. They were the precursor to the immensely popular Janoon, with their youth anthem Dil Dil Pakistan, Heart or Love Pakistan, the trajectory of whose lead singer, Junaid Jamshed, is tellingly representative of Pakistan then and now. Jamshed, who was from Karachi, underwent a spiritual rebirth and went from being a pop icon to an Islamic preacher. In 2004, under the influence of the Tablighi Jamaat, a transnational missionary movement in existence since 1926 and operating with varying degrees of success across Muslim communities, he renounced music and devoted his life to religion, becoming increasingly vocal in sharing his puritanical views on various subjects. His uncle was one of the founding members of Prime Minister Imran Khan's political party, Pakistan Tehreek-e-Insaf, PTI, in 1996. Jamshed, in this avatar, provided the PTI with its own anthem of Naya Pakistan, in which the PTI promised a new Pakistan, free of corruption and bringing justice for all. Jamshed's conversion captures the shift from broad-minded patriotism to zealous Islamic nationalism, symbolized by the PTI under Imran Khan, but spearheaded by the new middle class of Pakistan. By the time of Jamshed's death in an air crash in 2016, Zia's Pakistan had turned full circle. It had started with the hanging of a political leader, Zulfikar Bhutto, in 1979, and outlasting Bhutto's daughter, her opponents, Zia's protege, Nawaz Sharif, and Musharraf. It had ended with Imran Khan, the epitome of Zia's vision for Pakistan. While the music scene is now perhaps recognised mostly by Coke Studio, sponsored by the soft drinks maker and set up as a franchise in 2008, there is far more palatable packaging and far less grounded politics in its productions, in keeping with the conformities, consumptions, and comforting confines of the new middle class. Whatever organic roots it presents, they are more cosmetic and less creative. Amara Maksud terms this buying modern, a musical idiom in which Sufi sounds are strummed to an electric guitar and the new aspiring middle class can connect modernity with religiosity. Outside the cities of Lahore and Karachi, dissent and disillusionment drive people to cling to subversive music as a medium. But the persisting traditions are too diverse, dispersed and localised to enthuse and mobilise as did once the charisma, force and passion of Nusrat Fateh Ali Khan or Iqbal Bano. Piety and profanity. Located in the heart of the walled city of Lahore, overlooking the Badshahi Mosque, is Hira Mandi, the Diamond Market. During the Mughal period, Hira Mandi was seen as the cultural centre of the city, where the traditional courtesan dance form, known as Muzra, was performed by skilled courtesans and considered an art. Through the colonial period and afterwards, however, the line between the Muzra and prostitution became blurred. In recent years, the area has been sanitised and given a facelift, and it now functions as a popular food street full of eateries, of which the most famous and established is Cuckoo's Den. Created by the artist Iqbal Hussain, Cuckoo's Den sits between the two extremes of piety and profanity, with all its contradictions laid bare. The building was once the home of courtesans, who charmed the local nobility and elites with their knowledge of poetry, dance, and classical music traditions, which was passed from one generation to the next. The courtesans, accompanied by mirasis, hereditary musicians, buckled under the pressures of the new religious state and the lack of patronage for their artistic form, and Hira Mandi increasingly turned to prostitution for survival. Hussein, himself the son, grandson, and brother of these dancing girls, painted these women and preserved the old mansion, or haveli, while operating an eatery on the rooftops. Hira Mandi, with its old havelis and narrow lanes set in the backdrop of grand 17th century architecture, exudes the Mughal influences so prevalent in North India and Pakistan. The Mughal miniature style of painting was revived by Abdul Rahman Shughdai, 1897 to 1975, Pakistan's first major artist. In keeping with the idea of Muslim self-determination, he rejected the modernist influences emerging from Europe and America. Ajaz Anwar, a Lahore-based painter born in Ludhiana, India, has followed with work that pays homage to Lahore, trying desperately to preserve the old crumbling buildings on canvas. Anwar had spearheaded the Lahore Bachao, Save Lahore, movement against the construction of the Orange Line Metro, which was fully inaugurated in October 2020. This bulldozing of history through the erasure of heritage sites in the name of new developmentalism is seen as disregard for Lahore's multicultural past and has been vehemently challenged by those who wish to preserve it. These voices are becoming fewer and marginal to the wider desires of a burgeoning metropolis. Under Zia, moral policing and cracking down on obscenity was part of the state project to control the personal and political lives of the people. Representation of what is deemed un-Islamic or obscene was quickly picked up by censors. Increasingly, music and dancing were presented as lewd, vulgar, and immoral acts which go against the tenets of Islam and should therefore be discouraged. This also marked a distinct rejection of these traditions, which have their roots in the subcontinental civilizations. During this period, when dancing in public was completely banned, many established artists sought exile and left Pakistan. When the Kathak dancer Nahid Siddiqui's programme was pulled off air following the ban on dancing, she left for the UK, where she continued to perform. Shima Kirmani, trained in the South Indian dance form of Bharatanatyam, continued regardless, and through the establishment of the Tehreek-e-Niswan, the women's movement, used cultural activism and performance to raise social awareness. Others, who could not flee or chose to remain, confined themselves to private performances. The creative freedom and space for writers and artists was curtailed, and they were forced to refrain from commenting on politics. Television and radio program scripts were both vetted by an Islamic scholar and also sent to the Ministry of Information for approval. More airtime was devoted to religious programming, reinforcing the piety of the state. The 1970s were a crucial decade in Pakistan, as it saw the transition from two wings to one, and the shift from its first democratically elected prime minister to probably the most ideologically influential martial law regimes. The scars of this decade have been deep, divisive, and detrimental. If Ayub's Pakistan was a so-called golden age of modernity and technology, and Yahya's Pakistan was an age of blood and iron, especially in Bangladesh, then between Bhutto and Zia, the country saw its political, socio-cultural, and economic landscape transformed. From Bhutto hosting the Second Islamic Summit Conference in 1974 to the military Islamic dictatorship of Zia, which he himself fell prey to, this period saw the emergence of a new kind of Pakistan, culturally conservative and religiously literal, at least outwardly. Small changes began to seep into mainstream society. The Persian parting greeting of Khuda Hafiz, roughly translated as May God Protect You, was gradually replaced with the more Arabic-sounding Allah Hafiz, which was first used on PTV in 1985 at the end of a programme. In contemporary social interaction, Khuda Hafiz is used by many to make a political statement against this encroachment from Arabia. The word Khuda represents more than just a simple greeting. It is a connection to the past, to the language and sentiments of poets like Iqbal and Fez. It is part of the subcontinental Islamic tradition that developed over centuries rather than a recent injection. Similarly, the holy month of Ramzan has become Ramadan. The trend is so pervasive that Pakistan is sometimes referred to as Al-Pakistan by critics and supporters alike. Arabic does not have the P, which is replaced with a B. Away from the patron-client state and its glitz and glamour are the everyday spaces of the tea houses, street food, street art, and the underground, where subversive voices discuss the country's woes. Sometimes, these subversive voices break out of the shadows, as with the sensational life and death of Kandil Baloch by the journalist Sanam Mahir. Based on the extraordinary life of Baloch, a 26-year-old woman whose outspoken social media posts and provocative videos had outraged conservatives and who was murdered by her brother in 2016, the book highlights the stark contradictions in societal norms in Pakistan today. Baloch's life and death highlight the precarious relationship between popular culture, classist society, patriarchal family, and a strong religious state.